Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chagiga Daf Yud Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 12 lines from the top of Daf Yud Ches. At the end of our previous shiur, we established that both Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish are of the opinion that Chol HaMoed has melacha restrictions, as the Gemara says that Chol HaShemoed osu basias melacha. The opening section of today's Gemara, that will take us down most of this Omid, deals with sources on this topic, and in the Gemara text itself you will notice a series marking, diamonds, and on the side under our Nosei Mivneh heading we explain these are Mekoros HaMelamdim Al Isur Melacha B'chol HaMoed, sources that indicate the prohibition of Melacha on Chol HaMoed. Parenthetically, at the beginning of Maseches Moed Katan, there is a discussion, or we should point out the Rishonim discuss the issue of, is the Isur Melacha of Chol HaMoed an Isur Doraisa or an Isur Derabonan? For our purposes, though, we're going to have Tanaic sources that feature Psukim, and we continue now with the Gemara itself. Mino Hani Mili, Detonu Rabonan. From where do we know this point that Melacha is Osir on Chol HaMoed? So we have a Tanaic source, Es Chag HaMatzus Tishmor Shivas Yomim. That's the Pasuk, which indicates that we should observe Pesach, Chag HaMatzus is Pesach, for 7 days. Limeid Al Cholo Shemoed She'osir Basias Melacha. The fact that you have to observe 7 days of Pesach, and it says Tishmor, as Rashi says, is an Azhora, indicating a Lo Saaseh, a negative command. Therefore, there is a restriction alluded to in this pasuk to the performance of Melacha throughout Pesach, including Chol HaMoed. That's Divrei Rabbi Yoshia. Rabbi Yonason Oimer, Eino Tzorech. Rabbi Yonason says, no, I don't need the pasuk for that. Kal v'chomer, the Isur of Chol HaMoed Melacha, can be derived through Kal v'chomer logic. Uma Rishon v'shvi'i, mind you, the first day of Pesach and the last day of Pesach, She'ein Kedusha Lifneim Ulachreim. Those are days that are not preceded by holiness, and that's as far as the first day. And after the seventh day, there is no holiness. And yet, these days are osur basias melacha. Cholo shalmoyed shiesh kedusha lifneim lachreim. The intermediate days, as their name suggests, are bounded on both sides, before them and after them, by days of holiness. Eino din shehe osur basias melacha? Is it not all the more so that they should have melacha restrictions? So as far as logic is concerned, Rabbi Yonason at this point feels that that is sufficient proof to indicate that there is an isur asias melacha during Chol HaMoed. A new geometric form appears, a volcano shape or trapezoid if you prefer. And on the side, under the Mivneh heading, we indicate this is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a give-and-take section of this source. With the narrow part facing upwards, those are pircha or kusha, a challenge or a question that's raised, al Reb Yonason, a challenge to Reb Yonason's position, and the inverted shape are tshuvos, responses. So the Gemara asks in this source, Sheshes Yemei Breshis Yochichu. You can allow the 6 days of any week, any given week. They can prove to the contrary. Sheesh kedusha lifneim lachem. Any unit of 6 days is bounded by a Shabbos before them and after them. You have Sunday through Friday. Those are 6 days. And before Sunday was Shabbos, and after Friday is Shabbos. Umutorin basias malacha. And those 6 days, we call them the 6 weekdays, are allowed in asiyas malacha, in performance of creative activities. So if that be the case, you can't use the logic that Rabbi Yonason suggested to prove malacha during Chol HaMoed. That is the Isur malacha during Chol HaMoed. The Gemara counters, Ma l'sheshes yemei breshes. The example of this, of the six common weekdays are not a challenge to the logic. She'ein bohen korban musaf. There isn't any special additional sacrifice that's offered during a normal weekday. Should you say the same thing regarding Chol HaMoed, where there is a korban musaf each day of the holiday of Pesach, a special sacrifice, we call it a korban musaf in English, an additional sacrifice is offered in the Beis HaMikdash in honor of the holiday. Therefore, it's also basias malacha. So at this point, we can use the Kal Vachomer of Rabbi Yonason and the example of the Sheshes Yemei Breishis, the 6 common weekdays. They do not serve a challenge. Well, the Gemara says if you're basing your proof then on the presence of Korban Musaf, Rosh Chodesh Yochiach, the example of Rosh Chodesh, the first day of a new month, can prove the contrary. Sheyesh Bo Korban Musaf. There is this special sacrifice offered to Mutar Basias Malacha, and Rosh Chodesh is allowed in Malacha performance. If that be the case, then the presence of the Korban Musaf is not the factor that creates Isur Malacha. And if that be the case, so then we can reinstate the Pircha from the Sheshes Yemei Breishis, namely that even though you have a unit of days that are bounded by sanctity, that does not mean that the intermediate days are also in malacha. Because and as far as the 6 days of 6 normal weekdays are concerned, they do in fact show this idea that the fact that it's bounded by Kedusha doesn't mean that there is Isur Asiyas Malacha. The fact that the intermediate days have a Korban Musaf, that's not going to increase their restriction level. The Gemara says, no, well, we respond to the Rosh Chodesh point, Ma'ala Rosh Chodesh, She'ein Korui Mikro Kodesh. Rosh Chodesh in the Torah is not called Mikro Kodesh. And Rashi explains that the term Mikro Kodesh implies sanctify those days with the Isur Malacha. So the Rosh Chodesh, okay, we understand that it's Mutar B'Malacha, it's not called Mikro Kodesh. Toimar B'Cholo Shomoyed Shekoroi Mikro Kodesh. Can you say the same leniency regarding Chol HaMoed, which after all is called by the Torah Mikro Kodesh? Hoyol v'korui Mikro Kodesh din hu shaser basias malacha. Since the Torah refers to them by the term Mikro Kodesh, it's only logical then that they are restricted in malacha. So as far as Rabbi Yonason is concerned, he has a Kal Vachomer type logic, and to buttress that Kal Vachomer logic, you have this Gzeiras HaKosuv of Mikro Kodesh, which enables him to use the Kal Vachomer, and it's the intermediate days of Av, the Chol HaMoed days, are a cut above Rosh Chodesh in the sense that they, as opposed to Rosh Chodesh, are usur in Asiyas Malacha. Tanyo Idoch, Kol Meleches Avoido Loisa Asu. Rashi points out that this pasuk of Kol Melecha Savodah Lo'sasu is next to V'somach Le'Shivas Yomim Takrivu Isheh, so that you have a juxtaposition of phrases of do not do melacha for 7 days. After all, when you learn the Torah, when you open up a Torah scroll, there's no punctuation. So if you read Kol Meleches Avodah Lo Sasu, and then very close to that it says Shivas Yomim, even though the Shivas Yomim is attached to the offering of sacrifices, nevertheless you can see that, or you can interpret that Kol Meleches Avodah Lo Sasu, do not do melacha, is associated with 7 days. Limeid al, the Gemara continues, Limeid al Cholo Shemoed Shasur Basiyas Melacha. This tells us that Chalamoid is restricted in Malacha performance. Tiv Rabbi Yossi Aglili. That's Rabbi Yossi Aglili's approach. Rabbi Akiva Oimer Eino Tzorech. He says you don't need that approach. El Aharehu Omer. There's another pasuk. It says Eile Moyade Hashem V'chulei. Bema HaKosuv Medaber. When the pasuk says Eile Moyade Hashem, these are the holidays of Hashem. What is the pasuk referring to? Im Barishon, if it's a reference to the first day of the holiday, we should point out that in this pasuk of Eilim Moadei Hashem, it goes on to say Asher Tikru Oysa Mikroi Kodesh, and we made a reference to that which Rashi says, that the term Mikroi Kodesh Mashma has implies a Molocha restriction. So when here the Brisa asks Bema Kosim Medaber, which days are being referred to by this pasuk that says these are the holidays of Hashem with an Isur Malacha? Im Barishon, if it's a reference to the first day of the holiday, Harei Kfar Ne'amar Shabboson. Regarding the first day of the holiday, you have a word already indicating ceasing from a creative activity. The word Shabboson means to desist or rest. Im b'shvi, if it's a reference to the last day of the holiday, Harei Kfar Ne'amar Shabboson. Regarding the last day, also the Torah writes that the seventh day is characterized by Shabboson, desisting from Malacha. So what does Eile Mikrei Hashem Asher Tikro Yisum Mikrei Kodesh refer to? Ho'ein HaKosuv Medaber Ela B'cholos Shel Moyed. So that pasuk that Rabbi Akiva cited is a reference to Chol HaMoed, L'lam D'chol She'osu B'asiyas Malacha. It informs us that there is a Malacha restriction during Chol HaMoed as well. Tanyo Idoch, and a third source on this topic. Sheshes Yomim Toichal Matzos Uveyom HaShvi Atzeres LaShem. That's the pasuk, which obviously is in the context of the holiday of Passover. And we say here, Ma Shvi Otsur, just like the seventh day is restricted. And as Rashi adds that in this pasuk it says, Lo Sase Melacha, you're not to do creative activity. So Af Sheshes Yomim Atsurin, so too all other 6 days are restricted. Well, E Ma Shvi Otsur B'chol Melacha, Af Sheshes Yomim Atsurin B'chol Melacha, if just like the seventh day, the last day of Pesach, is restricted in all Melachas, are we to say the same regarding all other days of Pesach? Talmud Lomar, Uvayoim Hashvi Atzeres. Hashvi'i Otsur B'chol Melacha, V'ein Shisha Yomim Atzurim B'chol Melacha. The seventh day is totally restricted in Melacha. The other days, the intermediate, we're speaking specifically during the Chol HaMoed days, are not restricted in every Melacha. Ha lo mosron al kosov elo lachachomim loymar loch e ze yoim osur vi e ze yoim muter e zo malacha osura vi e zo malacha muteres. So from the Torah recognizes that it's in the hands of the chachomim to tell us, by way of their power concerning establishing a new month, so they in effect are telling us when the days of the holiday come about, and through that which days are really usur in Malacha and which days are not totally also in malacha, and they also have their power to define which kinds of malacha are also on Chol HaMoed, and that will include malachas that, let's say, things that you could wait and hold off on doing, and which malachas are mutter, those are associated with activities that if you don't do them, you will suffer a loss, which we call a dover ha'oved. The Gemara continues. Umutoran behesped v'tainis shelo l'kayim es divrei ha'oimrim atzeres achar ha'shabbos. The Mishnah spoke about a case of the Yoim Tavoyach, the, we'll call it the makeup day. Well, let's take for example if Shabbos and Shavuos coincide. That means Shavuos, the holiday of Atzeres, which is also known to us as Shavuos, falls out on a Shabbos. You can't sacrifice the holiday sacrifices on Shabbos. They don't supersede Shabbos. So you sacrifice them on the next day, which is on Sunday, which is the day after Shavuos, which had coincided with Shabbos. And that next day, that Sunday, is called Yom Tavoach, the slaughtering day. The Mishnah said that when that happens, eulogies are allowed. In other words, we're not going to treat that day as a day of any degree of festivity, even though a holiday sacrifice is being offered. Nevertheless, do not treat it with any special sanctity. And therefore, it's allowed. One is allowed to eulogize, which is certainly characteristic of a normal weekday. And one is allowed to fast, so as to give no credence to the approach taken by the apostates and heretics that insisted that Shavuos must come out on a Sunday. And without getting into the psukim and the reasons for their heretical approach, but we do not hold like them, that namely Shavuos, as far as traditional Torah law is concerned, can come out any day of the week. Whereas the scoffers and apostates insisted it coming out on Sunday, so that when we have this situation of the Yom Tavoach coming out on Sunday, we don't want to treat it as if it's with any glimmer of holiday spirit to it, so as not to give any credence to their approach that Sunday is the official day for Shavuos to come out. The Gemara asks, "V'hotanya, do we not have a Tanaic source that says as follows? Maisa umeis alaksa, it's a name, Alex, meis alaksa belud, v'nichnesu kol Yisrael l'sofdo." It's an incident where this gentleman, Alex, died in the city of Lud, and the entire community gathered to eulogize him. Velo hinichom Rebbe Tarfon. And Rebbe Tarfon did not allow them to continue the eulogy. And we skip the bracketed section because the language inside the brackets is not accurate. And we continue reading. Mipnei sheyoyim tevoachoya. So we see from this source, according to Rebbe Tarfon, the Yom Tvoach is to be treated as if it were a holiday. We don't seem to be afraid of giving credence to the Tzedukim. The Gemara will answer that this Brisa has circumstances that are different than the circumstances in the Mishnah. But before we get to that, let's just continue with the bracketed section that we skipped. The source says that there was a eulogy taking place, and Rabbi Tarfon did not allow them to continue eulogizing, because it was the holiday of Shavuos. Yom Tov Salka Daitoch. Ibi Yom Tov Mi Kaasu. If you were to think that it was the actual holiday of Shavuos, who would come? Who would come to a eulogy on the actual holiday? Could be also without my own guess is it could be that people had come from far away to this eulogy. The Lashon, the expression was Nichnasu Kol Yisrael. That means they came from afar, and you couldn't come from outside the Tchum, outside the distance traveling restrictions that every holiday as well as Shabbos has. So could they have possibly come if it were the holiday itself? So that wasn't the case. Ella Emo, but rather what you should say, what happened there, it was Mipnei Shiyom Tvoachoya, because it was the makeup day for bringing the holiday sacrifices. So you see from here that Yom Tvoach is to be treated as if it were a quasi-holiday by virtue of the fact that you're not allowed to eulogize that. Eulogizing is certainly anathema to the holiday, the festive experience. So how do we resolve this Tanaic source, which says because it's the Yom Tvoach of Shavuos, you have to restrict eulogizing with our Mishnah that says if it's Yom Tvoach, you don't restrict eulogizing. Lo kasha, there is no contradiction. Kan b'yom tov shechalios achar haShabbos, kan b'yom tov shechalios b'Shabbos. In the case where Yom Tov comes out, achar haShabbos means in the middle of the week, and a person didn't bring his holiday sacrifices, let's say Shavuos came out on a Wednesday, and he didn't bring the holiday sacrifices on Wednesday. He brought them, he had to bring them on a makeup day, which we discussed earlier in our Shiurim. That's called also called Yom Tvoach. And that obviously is a case where the Yom Tvoach is not falling out on Sunday. It's coming out, if we said that the holiday fell on the middle of the week on Wednesday, and he didn't bring his korbanos on Wednesday, but he brought them the next day on Thursday, so that's a case where helpful, we'll say, for the tzedukim in pleading their cause that Shavuos is to come out on a Sunday. You're bringing the holiday sacrifices on a Thursday. It has nothing to do with the tzedukim. So therefore, we don't have any interest in seeing to it that eulogizing takes place. So we're going to restrict eulogizing on a Yom Tvoach that comes out on any day other than a Sunday. However, and so that the first reference on the bottom line of Kan, B'yom Tov Shechalios Achar Shabbos, that's the case in Lud, where Yom Tov came out after Shabbos, so Memela, the Yom Tovoach of that Yom Tov of Shavuos, was not on a Sunday. The case of our Mishnah where we said it's Mutter Behesped, where we, in fact, were interested in it, the Yom Tovoach appearing as a weekday, so as to refute the tzedukim, that's b'yom tov shechalios b'Shabbos. That's when Shavuos comes out on Shabbos. So the Yom Tvoach, the makeup day, the first makeup day, is Sunday. And as we explained before, we're interested in that situation. Even though you're bringing the holiday sacrifices, then it should appear as weekday as possible. Hence, the Mishnah said muter behesped v'tainis. We continue now on Omid Beis with a new Mishnah, and this new Mishnah actually represents the beginning of a long topic. And on the top of our page, in the outside margin, we have the Nosei Kloli. Here we've written a general topic heading and indicate Ad Sof HaMaseches, until the end of this tractate. So even though we're here in the second perek, there's an entire third perek that follows. Interestingly enough, the material, the content from this point till the end of the Masechta is, as we write here, in Yonei Tuma V'Tara B'Truma V'Kodshim V'Od. We'll be dealing with topics are related to defilement and purity with regard to Truma. Truma is the tithe given from one's produce to the Kohanim, and it must be maintained in a state of Tara, of purity, as the Kodshim is the entire realm of sacrifices. So we begin the Mishnah. Noitlim liyodayim lechulin ulamaisir letruma. Yodayim, those are a person's hands. And we should point out now, and we'll probably have to repeat this point numerous times as we go on through these datum of Gemara, that we're dealing with a lot of rabbinic-based halachas, dinim de rabbonan. So one of those dinim de rabbonan is that a person's hands are considered tome until he purifies them. Again, we're dealing with a rabbinic point of view. If a person is tohor, if he's pure, if he hasn't encountered defilement, then he just walks around taking care of himself. We don't say on a total level that he is tohor and his hands are tome, but on a rabbinic level, we say there is such a concept. So the Mishnah opens up and tells us that in order to remove this rabbinic tumah from one's hands, all one has to do is take a vessel that holds a revius of water. Revius is a certain quantity, a few ounces of water, and pour the water over his hands, and they are purified. And this purification works for chulin, meiser — meiser is meiser sheni — and truma. That after washing one's hands, so then one can partake of food, whether it be chulin. And the issue of why do we wash our hands for chulin? Chulin is common, mundane food. That's an issue that will be touched on in the Gemara as we go through. But there's for chulin food, common, mundane food. Meiser is the meiser sheni. That's the tithe that one separates from his produce, 10% of his produce. During the 6 years of the Shemitah cycle, of the sabbatical cycle, so years 1, 2, 4, and 5, he separates the Meiser Sheni tithe, and he eats that in Jerusalem. And there's a requirement of purity that must be maintained with regard to Meiser Sheni produce. So in order to eat that, one has to wash his hands. And Truma — Truma is the tithe given to Kohanim. And when you see Truma, you're referring to, obviously, the Kohanim. Before they eat their Truma tithe, they have to wash their hands. There's another category in the Mishnah, Ulekodesh Matbilin. In order to partake of sacrifices, one has to immerse his hands in a mikveh. Is to be toivel his hands. That's instead of pouring water over the hands, he puts his hands into the pool of water, the mikveh pool, to metahir them. This is considered, as Rashi says, a ma'alah, a stringency of kodshim over truma. Rashi also points out, like we mentioned before, that even though we're dealing with this, what we call stam yodayim, hands concerning which we don't know that they became defiled, they didn't touch anything that would metama a person, nevertheless, there is a stringency, an expectation, a requirement of immersing one's hands in the pool before partaking of the pool, meaning the mikveh, before partaking of sacrificial meat. Ulechatos, a third category, a more stringent category, in order for one to be allowed to touch mechatos — this is the water in which the ashes of the poraduma, the red heifer, were mixed — that has a very high level of stringency that's attached to it. So that regarding chatos means the poraduma water. That's the water mixed with the ashes. There's a standard that you see here that you don't find elsewhere. It says im nitmu yodav, if a person's hands came into contact with a rabbinic form of tumah, things that are metame hands. And when we say metame hands, we mean metame hands and not the rest of the person. That idea, by the way, does not appear on a Torah level. So you're dealing with a rabbinic level tuma, and there are numerous things that are capable of doing that. One of the examples is touching a holy scroll, that there's the Rabbanan imposed tumas yodayim. Now, a person whose hands became tomei, if he thinks If he thinks he's going to, if he's going to need to touch the mechatas, well, the Mishnah tells us, "Nitmu yodav nitma gufo." If his hands become tameh, his entire body becomes tameh, and therefore he has to immerse his entire body in the mikveh. And this is an example of a chumrah by mechatas above kochim. By kochim, we said that if one's hands become tameh, all he has to do is immerse his hands in the mikveh, and that's it. He doesn't have to go put his immerse his entire body in the mikveh. But when it comes to touching mechatas, if his hands became tameh, his whole body becomes tameh, and he has to toivel entirely in a mikveh. The Mishnah now goes on with a theme that you'll see lasts a number of lines in the Mishnah. There are many different levels of food item that we have just mentioned. That's chulin, meiser, truma, kochim, and mechatos, even though that's not a food item, but it's called chatos. It's the highest level of tahara requirement that we have here. The Mishnah tells us, Toval lechulin, if a person immersed himself in a mikveh with the intention of achieving purity for eating chulin, Huchsik lechulin, also lemaiser, if his kavona, Huchsik means he had kavona, he had intent to establish his body as being tohor. Establishing his body is Huchsik, that's to assume a status of tahara, of purification, for the purpose of chulin. His mindset was concentrated on the eating of chulin. I'm now immersing myself to achieve tahara for chulin purposes. So we say, then you can eat the chulin, but you're not allowed with that immersion and expressed intent to then go ahead and eat meiser as well. You didn't have kavana in your immersion for the eating of the Meiser Sheni. The Meiser Sheni, by the way, is eaten in Yerushalayim. Tova LaMeiser, Huchsik LaMeiser, Osur LaTruma. If he immersed himself for Meiser food eating, and he had that intent, he was concentrating, was focused on, my immersion is for Meiser eating, Osur LaTruma. It does not enable him, if he is a Kayain, to partake of Truma. Tova l'truma, huchsuk l'truma, osur l'kodesh. Once again, you see, if his intention was for truma, it helps for truma, but it's not going to help for the next level up. If he were interested in partaking of sacrificial meat, he wouldn't be able to do so with that tvila that he did so with the intent of eating truma. Tova l'kodesh, huchsuk l'kodesh, osur l'chatas. If he immersed himself for sacrificial eating purposes, that doesn't give him license to then touch mechatas. Tova lechomor mutter lekal. In all of the examples that we had, if he had intention for a higher level type food, he is allowed with that intention to also partake of the lower level, that whatever is lower from that. In other words, if he had intention for truma, that will enable him to also partake of Meiser Sheni if he should so desire. Toval velo huchsuk. If a person immersed himself and he didn't have any intention for achieving purity, he just had the bathing intent. Ki'ilu lo toval. It then is tantamount to his not having immersed at all. We continue with a similar hierarchy of things, but we're going to speak about clothing. Bigdei Am Haaretz, Medris Leprushim. The clothing of an Am Haaretz is a person who we loosely refer to him as an ignoramus, but in these kind of topics, he's a person that does not assign importance or concern with maintaining purity. He's an Am Haaretz. His clothing are considered like a medris, This is a new word for some of you. Medrash, maybe it reminds you of the word mattress, and if it does, it's no mistake. Because medrash is a phenomenon of items upon which one lies, or puts his weight on them, or leans on them, or sits on them. Medrash has to do with something that supports you, and that can include even your shoes. Clothing. People sit down while wearing their clothing. There, so that from a Torah standpoint, there's certain kinds of tumah. For example, Nida, a woman who experiences her monthly female cycle. When she's experiencing that cycle, she becomes tameah, to the point that even the chair that she sits on becomes tameh. Not only is it, does it become tameh, but it's capable of communicating tumah to someone else, to a person that touches that chair. So the concept of medrash is more or less as we just explained. Here we're dealing with a rabbinic area where we assign medrash tumah is, again, as we said, it's a high level of tumah. As Rashi calls it, it's an ava tumah. It's a primary level of tumah that's capable of imparting tumah to people. So the clothing of an amoretz represent medrash to prushim. Prushim are people that eat their chulin in a state of ritual purity. They're oichle chulin betahara. So if a person is a porush, he's someone that's concerned with eating his tchulin b'tara, and he happened to have had contact with the clothing of an am ha'aretz, this porush will now become tameh. And for him to continue eating his tchulin, he'll have to immerse himself in a mikveh before he would be able to continue eating tchulin. Big day, prushin, medrash li'oichle truma. The clothing of the prushim are considered like medrash. They're considered like tomei for kohanim. So that a kohen would have to be careful to avoid coming into contact before eating truma with the clothing of people that are porush. Big day oichle truma, the clothing of kohanim. Medrash l'kodesh are considered medrash for someone that is interested, is intent on eating sacrificial meat. He'd have to be very careful not to come into contact with the clothing of any of the aforementioned individuals, including the clothing of kohanim who eat truma. Big day kodesh, medrash l'chatos, and along the same lines, people who are thinking of touching the mei chatos, they had better not touch the mei chatos if they had come into physical contact with the clothing of people, even if they were those that were eating sacrifices. Yosef ben Yoezer hoyochosid shebekuna, he was a pious kohen, voisa mitpochosoi medrash l'kodesh. Nevertheless, his mitpachas, it's an article of clothing, his mitpachas would be considered a source of tumah for someone that was going to be eating a sacrifice. Yochanan ben Gudgada, hoya oichel altaras hakodesh kol yomov. He was someone that practiced eating even his chulin with the same level of purity that you would assign to sacrificial meat. He was very diligent, very careful in even the chulin that he ate, even the mundane food that he ate. He would make sure that it wouldn't come into contact with all kinds of tumah sources, even if they were very low-level sources of tumah. He would avoid having his chulin come into contact with them. So even so, his mitpachas, again we said it's an article of clothing, the mitpachas of Yochanan and Gudgada would be considered a source of tumah for someone that would be touching the mei chatos. Before we go on, we glance at the side. We have a nosei, a topic heading, where we've written ha'alos stira. Ha'alos is to raise a stira, a contradiction. Bein mishnah senu u'mishnah bebikurim. We have two Tanaic sources. We have the mission, our mission, on one hand, on the one hand, and we have a mishnah in tractate Bikurim, which is from Seder Zroyim, which is on the other hand. E chulin u'mais. Before eating chulin or meiser sheni, do you have to wash your hands? So our Mishnah indicated yes. That was the opening line of the Mishnah. It said notlin yadayim the chulin ula meiser. The Gemara asks chulin umeiser mi bo'u netilas yadayim. Do chulin and meiser in fact necessitate the washing of hands? Rominhi, we raise the following contradiction. Hatruma v'abikurim. Bikurim are translated as the first fruits. Those are the first fruits that blossom on one's tree. Those are eventually to be given to a kohen in the Beis HaMikdash. And bikurim have the same status as truma. The posuk in referring to Bikurim, the Torah calls it Trumas Yodecha. So, Truma and Bikurim, Chayov and Malayim. Now, this source has a number of halachas. I personally would prefer to de-emphasize all of the halachas, rather concentrate on the main point for our discussion. So, we go through the source. Hatrum Bikurim, Chayov and Malayim. Misa, the non-Kohen eats it. He would be Chayov Misa at the hands of heaven, death at the hands of heaven. The Choymesh, and he'd have to add a fifth if he ate it inadvertently. And the Osur Lezorim, it's prohibited to non-Kohanim. V'hein Nichse Kohen, they are considered the personal property of the Kohen. He can use it to buy things or to marry a woman with them. The Oilin Be'echad Umeon, in a mixture, if you have if they get mixed up with Chulin, in order for the mixture to be allowed, it would have to be 100 times Chulin against one part of Bikurim or Truma. Now here's what we want to emphasize. Uteunin netilas yodayim. Bikurim and Truma necessitate the washing of hands before eating them. The hair of Shemesh, and if a person had been Tomei, he would have to not only immerse himself in a mikveh, but have to wait for sundown before he can eat from the Truma and Bikurim. Hare Elu B'Truma Bikurim. Everything that we mentioned till now is applicable to Truma Bikurim. Ma She'ein Kein B'Meiser V'Kol She'ein Chulin, which is not so in the case of Meiser, and all the more so would not be applicable to Chulin. So that what we've done with Gemara markings is we've dashed underlined the term Netilas Yadayim and Ma She'ein Kein B'Meiser V'Kol She'ein Chulin, namely Netilas Yadayim does not apply to Meiser and Chulin. So Kashya Meiser a Meiser, Kashya Chulin a Chulin. This presents a contradiction between our Mishnah on those two points. Our Mishnah said Meiser and Chulin require Netilas Yadayim. And this source says, Meiser and Chulin do not necessitate Netilas Yadayim. Bishloma Meiser a Meiser lo kasha. Truth be told, the Gemara says, as far as Meiser is concerned, there isn't really a contradiction. Ha Rebbe Meir v'ha Rabbonon. There's a machlokis tanoim with how to regard Meiser, the machlokis between Rebbe Meir and the Chachomim. The Snan. So we now have a Tanaic source in which Rebbe Meir and the Chachamim appear. You'll see the Chachamim have a restrictive approach to Meiser, so hence they'll be the ones that are the author of our Mishnah that require Netilas Yadayim from Meiser, and Rebbe Meir is lenient with regard to Meiser. What does the source itself say? Desnan kol ha-ta'un bias mayim midivrei soifrim. All those situations that require bias mayim's entrance into the water, it means immersion, Midivrei Sofrim, because of rabbinic ruling, Mitame Es HaKodesh, so a person that became Tomei Midrabonon. If that be the case, so with regard to sacrifices, he becomes a second level Tumah, which means that if he touches a a piece of sacrificial meat, it will become a third level, a shlishi l'tuma, and a shlishi l'tuma can then mitame something else, another piece of sacrificial meat, making it a fourth level tuma. So a person who became tomei midivrei sofrim, he absorbed a rabbinic level tuma, which necessitates his own immersing himself in a mikveh, he's assigned with regard to sacrifices, he becomes that which, when he touches another item, that other item is metame kodesh. Upoisel es hatruma. With regard to truma, what this person who became rabbinically impure, what happens is that if he touches truma, so the truma will become pasul, but it won't transfer tumah to something else, to another piece of truma. So whereas with regard to kachim, he is capable of imposing tumah to the item that he touches. And when we speak about imposing tumah, we mean it is then capable of being metama then another piece. With regard to truma, he is called a sheni as well, but with regard to truma, all that happens is that the next piece he touches becomes puzzle, becomes rendered unfit, but it's incapable of being metama something else. Umutur l'chulin u'lemaiser divrei Rabbi Meir. Now, what we've done with our markings, emphasis on the main words, the word mutter and l'maiser, means that he won't affect meiser sheni. That's Rabbi Meir's approach. V'chachomim oisrin b'meiser. The chachomim say that someone that is rabbinically tamei, he will render the meiser sheni unfit. So you can see that they have a more restrictive approach with regard to Meiser, Rabbi Meir, a lenient approach. Hence the Mishnah and the Brisa, the Mishnah with its restrictive approach, requiring the Tilas Yadayim from Meiser eating is according to the Rabbanon, and the Tanaic source that with which the Gemara opened, indicating leniency with regard to Meiser, that would be Rabbi Meir. Elachulin, achulin kashya. But how are we to resolve our Mishnah with the opening Tanaic source regarding Chulin? It's true the Chachomim are restrictive with regard to Meiser, but we don't see them restrictive with regard to Chulin. They don't argue on the issue of Chulin. So there's total leniency with regard to Chulin. So how do we explain the Mishnah that says that there's a necessity of washing one's hands for Chulin? The Gemara answers, and now we have a new marking, and on the side under the Mivneh heading, the triangle appears, and we also indicate there is a 1 and 2 to follow, two triangles. These are shlavim. These represent stages. Bishuv hastir b'inyan etilas yadayim l'chulin. How do we resolve the contradiction regarding the issue of washing one's hands for chulin? So here at stage one, we say lo kashya, kan b'chilo, kan b'negiya. For eating chulin, one would be expected to wash his hands. For merely touching the chulin, one would not be expected to wash his hands. Maskif lo Rav Simi bar Ashi, ad kan lo pligi rabbona leid Rabbi Meir, elo b'chilo d'meiser. Up till now, we see a Tanaic controversy regarding the requirements before eating of Meiser. Avo benegia de Meiser ubachila de chulin lo pligi. But as far as touching Meiser and even eating chulin, we don't see any machlokes, and meaning there's no machlokes, and it's mutter, it's allowed without washing of the hands. So at the answer we gave at the first triangle said that you need to wash your hands for achila of chulin. We don't find anyone that says that. Elo, approach number two. Iriv Iri Bachila. Both sources, the Mishnah and the Tanaic source quoted by the Gemara, the Mishnah and Bikurim, are both in fact talking about eating of chulin. Velo kashya. Nevertheless, still no contradiction. Kan bachilo dinamo, kan bachilo de peri. We make a distinction between the eating of bread and the eating of fruits. And here you have the source in the Talmud for the need of washing one's hands before the eating of bread, even if it be common bread, as we're talking here, common chulin is common food. For the eating of bread, we insist on the washing of hands, whereas for the eating of fruits, we do not. Yomer of Nachman kol anoytil yodav leperos harezem migase aruch. Anyone who washes his hands for the eating of fruits, and certainly with regard to fruits that were never mukhshir lekabel tuma, fruits that were never exposed to water for washing them off, one who washes his hands for eating chulin fruits that were not mukhshir lekabel tuma is considered a haughty individual. So this helps to explain then the source that says that chulin does not require netilas yadayim. It's for the eating of chulin, provided you're not talking about bread, because when you're talking about the eating of bread, even though it's chulin, we do require the washing of hands, and that's what our Mishnah would have been referring to. Before we continue, we glance at the side. We have a Nosei topic heading: Kavona benetilas utvilas yodayim. Ha'im hu me'akev. Intent. We're talking about intent when washing one's hands or immersing one's hands in a mikveh. Intent, kavona, for achieving tahara. Is that binding or not? The Gemara. Tonu Rabbanan, noitel yodav, one who washes his hands, niskaven, if he has intent, then yodav tahoros. Lonis kavein, if he doesn't have intent for purification, yodav tameos, then his hands remain tomei. V'chein ha-matbil yodav, matbil is immersing in a mikveh. Niskavein, yodav toros. Lonis kavein, yodav tameos. The Gemara asks, v'hot tanya, bein niskavein, bein lo niskavein, yodav toros. Now we've dashed underlined the key expression, lo niskavein, yet there is tahara. Omar Rav Nachmon loy kashya. Kan lechulin. If we're talking about washing one's hands for chulin, then kavona is not necessary. Kan, we continue at the top of Yud Tes Lamed Aleph. Kan lemeiser. For meiser sheni, there kavona is ma'akev. And Rashi adds, and certainly for truma, if one's washing his hands for truma. So now, by way of markings, let's make sure things are clear. We've got Rav Nachman, who gave a teretz in order to resolve the two sources with one another regarding a situation of non-kavona. Is tara achieved or not? So Rav Nachman gave his resolution. Now, as we look at the Gemara, at our marked Daf Gemara, we will notice a long bracketed section. Use your bracket length indicator to see actually how long this is. Following the brackets, you notice a double underline Esve. On the side of the Gemara, where that Esve double underline appears, you see we have a Mivneh, a structural note, and we indicate kushios. These are questions, mimakoros, from Tanaic sources, al Rav Nachman, challenging Rav Nachman, Yomar, Rav Nachman, who had said, tevila, the tevila lechulin lo boi kavona. From the sources that the Gemara raises, we're going to get the impression that tevila for chulin does require kavona. And you can see then, the double underlining appearing under the word Esve on two occasions. These are questions challenging Rav Nachman. On the we go back to the top line, and we noted the brackets. On the side, we have a note, which we basically said already, but let's read the note anyway. Achar hasograyim, after the bracketed section, HaGemara takshal Rav Nachman, the Gemara will challenge Rav Nachman mimikoros shemesumonim with the double underline demashim shigam lechulin boy kavona. From the sources brought in at the ace phase, later on we will get the impression that for chulin, immersion for chulin does necessitate kavona. We have now in the bracketed section a clarification for Rav Nachman's teretz. So as far as the superstructure is concerned, Rav Nachman gave his teretz, and after the long bracketed section, the Gemara will challenge his teretz. But in the meantime, the Gemara asks at the top line, Umenot temra dechulin lo bo kavona. From where do you know to give that answer, that chulin doesn't require kavona? Notice a diamond marking. On the side of the Gemara, we have a mivneh, structural note, where the diamond is featured. They are nisyonos lahavi mokor de lechulin loboi kavona benetilas yadayim. These are attempts to show that for chulin, you don't need to have kavona. And that's important. It's important for us to show a source for that in order to give substance to Rav Nachman's resolution. So now we read the source. This is an attempt. Disnan. Gal shenitlash. Uboy arboim saw. Gal is a wave. A wave of water that became detached. And it's a wave that contains the amount of water, the minimum amount of water that you would find in a mikveh. Uboy arboim saw. There are 40 saw. Saw is a unit of measure. For our purposes, all you have to recognize is that 40 saw is the amount of water that is found in a mikveh. V'nofal al ha'adam v'al ha'kelim tahorim. And this wave fell on a man or on vessels, they become tahor. Kotoni adam dumya dekelim. In this source, it teaches man together with vessels. Ma kelim delo machavni. Just like the vessels, they're inanimate objects. They don't have thoughts. So just like the kelim become tor delo machavni without kavona, af adam delo machavni. So too, the person becomes tameh becomes tahor, becomes purified without kavona. Notice the long marking we have. The Dalit is a Dechia. This entire section of Gemara is essentially part of a rejection of this serving as a source to show that Chulin doesn't require Kavona. As a result of this long rejection, you notice where the next diamond appears. It's at the end of the long rejection. And at that point, the Gemara will tell you, after the long rejection marking, Elo meha disnan, from the following source, where the next diamond is, Peros shenoflu, etc., and so forth. So we're taking our time going through this Gemara to emphasize the structure, where an attempt was just brought to show that chulin does not require kavona, and now we proceed with the rejection. Fifth line from the top, Umimai. Who says that you're to read the source with the explanation that we gave? Dilma beyoshev umetzapa emosayit lash hagal askinon. Maybe the source with the wave is in fact talking about a person who is just waiting for that wave to become detached. In other words, he has kavona. The kelim dumya de odom, and in the context of that source, it's the vessels that are compared to the person. Ma odom de bar kavona, just like a person is capable of intent. Af kelim de mechavenu. So too, with regard to the vessels, in that scenario, you've got the owner of the vessel standing by the side of this body of water. It's a very windy, stormy day, and waves become detached, and he's just waiting for that wave to fall on the vessels and purify them. So you see that the source of gal shenitlash is not a source where there is no intent. It's a source, in fact, that there is intent. And hence, you don't see any indication there that chulin becomes Torah without kavona. We have an internal brackets, and on the side, by the starred note, it says, so grayim, elu, these brackets, marim, they show the ad kan ikur hadachia. This is the main, up till now, we've reached the end of the rejection of the first diamond as being a source for Rav Nachman. So that up till this point, the brackets shows that up till this point we've done the main rejection umaafshirim lahagia miyad lahatzo hashnia, and by skipping the brackets they enable us to go immediately to the second suggestion, the second diamond. And as you can see, these brackets take you down to that point. That's lahatso hashnia l'mekor shechulin lo boi kavona. So now, that having been said, we go through the bracketed section itself. Now, if you want to challenge this rejection by saying as follows, v'chi teima b'yoyshevu mitzapa ma'ilim heimra, you might say that if you're talking about a case of a person sitting there next to the wave with kavona, it's obvious that it will metaher. What do I have to teach you a Tanaic source of something that's obvious? So you might say, if it's a case of yeshiv mitzapa, what do I have to tell this to you for? That the purification is effective. I'll tell you, no, it is necessary to tell me that. Salka daita chamina, without teaching this source and the fact that he's Yosef Metzapa, I would have thought that it won't work, even if he is Yosef Metzapa, even if he is there with intent. So I would have thought, Ligzor, let's impose a restriction of purification. Dilma osi lemitbal. There are two reasons to think that even though he's Yoshev Mitzapeh, this case of the Gal Shemitlah should not be effective. What are the two reasons I might have thought on my own that it should not be effective? Well, the first reason is, if I do allow the Gal Shemitlah to be effective, people will think that a Chardelis Shel Gishomim is also effective. Chardelis Shel Gishomim is rainwater that's sweeping down a slope. It's a torrent or a force of rainwater. Now, rainwater is capable of being metahir only if the rainwater accumulates in a pool. We call that a mikveh. It's stagnant. It's non-flowing. Rainwater in a flowing fashion is not mitaher. For rainwater to be effective, it has to be collected in a pool. So if we allow a wave, which is something in movement, to be mitaher, people might think that a chardelis shel gishomim is also mitaher, and it's not. Likewise, another potential problem arises, which we say don't worry about. But what's the potential problem with the gal shenitlash? If we allow the gal shenitlash to be metayer, now how's it metayer? Well, the the wave becomes detached, and I'm sitting there waiting for it to fall on my vessels, which are sitting on the ground, or fall on me while I'm on the ground. Let's talk about the vessels that are on the ground. However, if we allow that, I might think, that you can take the vessel, raise it into the wave in midair as it's arching over. So I might have thought, and that's not allowed. That's called that's tahara in it's purification in midair. So that this source of galshi nitlash, and the owner is Yoshev and Mitzabis, they're waiting for it to land on the vessels. I have to tell you that it's effective. Without my telling you that it's effective, I would have thought, like we see here in the Gemara of the Beis, we'll read it again, Nigzor, let's not allow that. Nigzor, Russian. Russian means the heads of the wave as it hits the ground. Let's not allow the Rosh to be effective in providing Tara, or to Kifin in anticipation of the owner. Kifin, it's like the word kippah is a dome, or in this case it's the curve of the wave as it's in midair, so that we should impose a restriction, don't allow the wave to be effective even when it hits the ground, in anticipation of the owner taking the vessels and putting it into the wave while it's in midair, and assuming that that would also be metahir. That's why it's important. This source of Galshin Itlash is talking about the owner is in fact sitting there waiting there, and we don't impose this Gezerah. Now, the Gemara mentions something just as a given, that immersing something bekifin in midair, putting the vessel into the water while it's curving over, that's not effective. So we have another internal bracketed section, simply to, and we have a note on the side where the stars appear. So graim elu metachamim asheilo utshuva beinyan hodein matbila mekifin. This is an internal subsection of Gemara which deals with the issue of how do I know that you're not to be matbil bekifin, and Gemara gives us an answer. So let's continue. Umino tamra delo matbilin bekifin. From where do we know that you don't immerse in the arching wave, the wave as it's arching over? The sanya matbilin baroshin ve'ein matbilin bekifin. You can allow the end of the wave, or the head of the wave as it hits the ground, to be metaher, but you cannot matbil, so you cannot immerse and metaher bekifin in the arching part of the wave. Lefi she'ein matbilin ba'avir, because the Torah speaks about immersing in a pool which is attached to the ground. But the Torah never speaks about a pool in midair. So since the kifin represents the part of the wave that's still in midair, that is not an effective source of water for purification. But as we indicated, and I hope we did justice to the structure of the Gemara, at the second line from the top we had brought a source where we thought Hulin doesn't require Kavona, and we reached that conclusion thinking that Adam is taught in comparison to Kalim, but we rejected that. Elo meha disnan. Here's our second diamond. Rather, it is from here that we see that Hulin does not require Kavona. Peros shenofel utoch amas hamayim. Someone had some fruit and they fell into a stream of water. Uposhat mish yodov tameos v'natlan, and someone whose hands were tamei extended his hands and took the fruits out of the stream of water. Yodov tahoros uperos einon b'chiyutan. His hands become tahor. The fruits, however, are not considered b'chiyutan. B'chiyutan is an expression borrowed from the pasuk which for our purposes, without getting into all the scriptural background, it means that the fruits are not mukshir lekabel tuma, though the fruits are wet, and wetness of fruits is a prerequisite for the fruits to become tume in the event that they touch a source of defilement. But not all wetness sets the fruits up for absorbing defilement. It has to be a wetness that whose presence is something you are happy with, you're satisfied with. In this case, the fruits fell into the water. You didn't want the fruits to fall into the water. They did. They fell into the water. So the fact that the fruits became wet is not sufficient for hachshora, for being machshir them lekabel tuma. We continue. Ve'im b'shvil shiyudchu yadav, if he reached into this stream of water with the intention of his hands becoming washed off. His hands might have been dirty, or tome. Tome is a spiritual defilement, it's not physical dirt. But this person might have wanted his hands to become clean as well. Now this person is actually, he's happy with the presence of the water here. He's happy with the presence of water. It's true the fruit fell into the water. It's not necessarily something with intention, but his reaching into the water was with the intention of his hands being cleaned off. So, in such a case, we see that he's happy with the presence of the water. Yodav tahoros, again, like we saw in the ratio, his hands become tahor. Vaperos harei hein b'chiyutan. And the fruit becomes mukshor lekabel tuma. If at this point, the fruit which became wet with water that he was happy with. Not necessarily that the fruits became wet, but he's happy with the presence of the water, at least for his hands. That's enough reason for the fruits to be considered, the wetness of the fruits is sufficient in this case to be mukshir lekabel tuma. I don't want to emphasize the issue of mukshir lekabel tuma too much at this, because that's not the focus of our discussion. The focus of our discussion is the fact that his hands are tohar, and he did not have any kavona in this source for purification. So we see from here, this is what the Gemara intended to, this is what Rav Nachman tried to tell us before, that for chulin, you do not need kavona. And now we challenge that very point. Eisvei Rabba l'Rav Nachman. We have a source that Hatoiva l'chulin, v'huchsik l'chulin, osur l'maiser. This we saw in our Mishnah. A person immersed himself for the eating of chulin, and that was his kavona, that the immersion is for the sake of his eating of chulin. He cannot eat maiser. But we infer from here, huchsik in, lo huchsik lo. What enables him to eat the chulin? Because he had kavona for purification for chulin purposes. Had he had no kavona, the immersion would not have been effective. So this is a problem for Rav Nachman, who said that for chulin you don't need to have intent. The Gemara says no, that's not the proper understanding of the Mishnah. Hachi koma, rather learn it as follows. Even if you had kavona for chulin, it's not enough to enable you to partake of meiser. So the source is not telling us, our mission is not telling us that you have to have kavona for chulin. Even if you didn't have kavona for chulin, the immersion would be effective to enable you to eat your chulin batara. However, even if you did have kavona for chulin, which you don't really need, but even if you did have that kavona, it still would be insufficient to enable you to partake of meiser sheni. Eisvei, again though, we challenge Rav Nachman. Toval v'lohuchsuk ki'ilu lo toval. Our Mishnah said that if a person immersed himself and he didn't have purification intention, it's as if he didn't toval. My lav ki'ilu lo toval klal. It's as if he didn't immerse himself at all, indicating that you have to have kavona, you have to have intent, purification intent. Lo, that's not the proper understanding. Ki'ilu lo toval l'maiser. If a person immerses himself without intent. So it's as if he didn't immerse himself at all for meiser purposes. Avol, tova lechulin. But the tevila that he did, the intentionless tevila that he did, is effective for chulin. Hu sovar dochi komatchile. Rabba thought that Rav Nachman was simply giving him a push-off answer. It's not a serious answer. Nofat dok v'ashkaf. Rabba went out, he researched the matter, and he found a source, Desanyo, that says explicitly, tova v'lo hufsuk, osur l'maisu mutur b'chulin. A person who immersed himself and did not have kavona to establish himself with tara, he cannot eat the meiser, but he is allowed to eat the chulin, just like Rav Nachman originally taught. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.